Welcome to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Driven to Business is a business forum program that focuses on success principles in business. And now, it's time for Driven to Business.
Good morning and welcome to this week's edition of Driven to Business. Glad you're here. My name is Eddie Mayfield. We're here every Saturday morning right here on Atlanta's Business Radio, Biz 1190, and we're glad you're here. By the way, we're streaming live right now on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast at its conclusion on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes, and as Isaac and I are always finding out, somewhere else we never heard of, but it's there all the time. We're glad you're here. Our guest today is Dan Baker. Dan is a senior vice president and marketing executive for Georgia Commerce Bank in Peachtree Corners, Georgia. Dan's a longtime friend of mine. Dan, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Eddie. I'm just glad to be here.
Dan, you've been in the banking business a long time. I've known you in the banking business a long time. I'm constantly amazed at how things have changed in the banking industry, even what little I know about it, but you've been in it a lot longer than I've even paid any attention to it. Tell us a little bit about some of the changes you've seen in the industry since you started your career.
Well, Eddie, I started back in 1972, a long, long time ago, here in Metro Atlanta, but in Cobb County. And in those days, what I remember most about is how easy it was, you know, when you were opening an account and so forth. There was a little 5x7 card, and on the front of it, you would sign your signature. Of course, on the back of the 5x7 card, there were some rules, regulations, and so forth. And over the years, that has changed so much. It's when you open an account now, due to all the rules and regulations and so forth that we have to comply with, it's almost like closing a mortgage loan to some degree. So that's one of the big changes that I've seen. Of course, the other changes can relate to rates that we've seen back in the 70s, you know, we would have like what would the old savings account that was paying 4%. We had a golden savings paying 5%. In 1980, I remember our bank was bought by a larger regional bank. And up until that time, banks were not permitted to have money market accounts. They could only have the passbook savings accounts. They changed the law in 1980, and at the time, I was with First National Bank of Atlanta, which was later known as First Atlanta. First Atlanta was organized in 1862. Well, our bank had this idea that we're going to make a real splash and build our portfolio of money market accounts, and came out with an interest rate of 18.62% on money market accounts. And
if you're still doing that, I'll deposit money today over there with you.
I bet you would. Yeah, we all would. Well, in those days, Trust Company Bank of Georgia, which is now SunTrust, they said, well, you know, we're not going to let them get away with this. And they came out and they offered 19%. And wow. Then CNS Bank, which is now Bank of America, jumped in and it went to 20. Anyway, long story short, it went to 21% on money market accounts. And, of course, you know, now money market accounts are like 0.50%. So we've seen a tremendous change over the years in different rates.
You know, tracking that, though, and then I bought a house in Texas back in the early 80s, and I had an 11% interest rate. I had friends that had 18% interest rates on their mortgage back in those days. Of course, interest rate amounts on money market and savings accounts have gone down. The only one lining in the cloud there is that other things have gone down with it because it tracks those kinds of accounts.
That's true. I know we have mortgage rates here now for first mortgages, you know, in the threes. So you're right.
Right.
We thought in the 70s that 6% and 7% was great. We
oh, yeah.
Dream that would be this low. So a lot of changes over that period of time.
You know, when you're talking about people, the regulations and the amount of information you have to give now to open the simplest banking account. You know, Dan, there's been a few times that I've had to go into a bank in the last few years and get a substantial amount of cash out for. That's something we don't do very often, but every now and then there'll be something going on where I need a fair amount of cash for it. And I always feel these days, if I'm walking around with, you know, $4,000 or $5,000 of cash, I feel like a crook. For some reason, and you know, one of the things that has happened in this country, it is it's almost de facto illegal to have large sums of cash on you, isn't it?
Well, you don't find people doing that as much. You know, we're kind of in an age of plastic, it seems like. And you're right, with all the new regulations, if you really get a check cash more than $10,000, you know, we have to report that.
Right.
And we also have to keep an eye if you come in periodically, like every day or so, to get $3,000. Like you're trying to get around that regulation, we have to report suspicious activity. So there are just tremendous amount of laws now that do make it, I'm not going to say impossible, but also make it very hard for you, you know, to, like, it's a lot different than it was years and years ago. But, so that's kind of, that has been a big change for us.
And back to sort of the banking business that you're in, as you know, as a small business owner, there up in Norcross, I left a larger bank many years ago to begin using a smaller community bank, and we can talk about all the reasons for that, and will as the day goes on here. But do you see that pretty often? Is my experience common there?
I think it is common, and I remember that day, and I'm very appreciative of that day between when you left and came over to the community bank, because I think I was there on that day.
You were.
Yeah, we do see that quite often a lot. Let me give you the scenario. At our bank, what we try to really build on here, and what I've always tried to do in banking, is develop relationships and build off of those relationships. And there are, in large regional banks and a lot of large banks, they have the concept. It's more of a transactional type customer, and where, you know, they want the transaction, but they don't want to take the time to develop those relationships like a community bank does. For example, there are banks here in Metro Atlanta that will come out and tell their employees that we want them to be banking with XYZ Bank, not you personally. And as a result of that, they're constantly rotating those employees or those bank tellers, customer service people, even loan officers, around to other banks, so that they don't get too familiar with that customer. And to me, that's not community banking. I think it's relationships, what you build over a period of time, where you take time to learn about the client's business, you learn about his family and so forth, and you develop that relationship. And when time comes that client needs something, you're able to help him. You understand him. You don't have to go back and be reintroduced, learn all that stuff all over, you know. And you've got a history on that client. So I think it's very important. I think it's going to continue to happen. I think there's always going to be a need for community banks out there.
It is very nice to walk into a bank, or for that matter, really, I think any business. It's nice to walk into a business, and as that old song from Cheers, you know, the movie, the TV show Cheers said, it's nice to go where everybody knows your name. And there just is something about being able to walk into a bank where you know the people there. And maybe you don't know every person in there, but you know a few people in there. And that is sort of the edge. I view it as sort of the basics of customer service. I can't imagine purposely at our company, for instance, purposely saying we don't want somebody to build a relationship with one of our sales guys, for instance. I mean, that's the whole point of having a sales guy, is that he's building relationships for those people. And it's hard to me to imagine that's a plan. I do get it that you don't want to lose a customer because that person retires or something. But you know, there's ways around that without actually telling them not to build a relationship with a customer, it seems like.
Well, you know, one thing that we do here, for example, is, you know, when someone comes in to open an account, we actually get up when the account is open and introduce them to everybody here in the bank.
Right.
So that they feel like they know that person the next time they come in. They may not remember exactly the name, but they remember the face. And after a few times, they're going to know them by name, and they're going to say their name. What really gets me is, especially in banking, is when you've got a customer standing in front of you at a teller line, you know, you've got his name right in front of you, and people love to be called by their name.
Yes, they
do. Why more and more companies don't do that, it's beyond me. And to let them know you're appreciated, I think Chick-fil-A does a fabulous job of you know, saying it's my pleasure and really showing people that they appreciate their business. You take Chick-fil-A, Ritz-Carlton, companies like that, they have got the right idea on customer service, and it pays off for them, I think.
And, you know, that is an edge that we've done a number of programs here about customer service. That is the edge that a small business, whether it's a small bank or a small service station or anything, that can be your edge, because people do like to go where they feel like people know them. I want to talk to you a little bit more. I'll stay on this subject a little bit after the break. One of the things that you do a good job with that I've always observed, and I don't do such a good job with this, you've done a great job for years of building, almost was going to say political relationships, but that's not what I mean. Community relationships is perhaps a better word. Whether you tend to know folks in the community, you tend to know community leaders, you know people at other businesses in the community, and as a result, sort of become a go-to person for them. And I'm sure it's not all directly related to banking. You don't get customers out of every bit of that, but it does give you a reputation, I think, of a man of integrity out in the business place, a person that's interested in the community and interested in them, and I think that really does play. The other thing I was going to ask you about after the break, I think, is, I'm just curious if you can think about it a little bit. I was wondering how you train your people to do exactly what you just said a moment ago, the idea that when a customer's standing there and you already know their name, go ahead and use their name and just be friendly. There's one quick little story here. I've said this on the air a number of times. I attended a seminar, speech probably is a better term, by Ross Perot many years ago, and he was talking about his company back then. This was long before he got in politics. He was talking about his company and how that he had his employees be very friendly to customers and one thing. And at the end of the speech, he opened it up for questions. And some guy asked him, said, "Mr. Perot, how do you train your people to be friendly to your customers?" And he kind of, in a typical Ross Perot style clipped speech, kind of shot back and said, "Why don't you just try hiring friendly people to start with and see if that does resolve the problem?" And you know, there's a lot of wisdom in that. It's just in the hiring process. Hire somebody that seems to care about people. A lot more to come. We're talking with Dan Baker with Georgia Commerce Bank up in Peachtree Corners. I'm Eddie Mayfield. This is Driven to Business. Don't go anywhere. Back in a moment. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're talking with Dan Baker. Dan is the Senior Vice President and the Marketing Executive with Georgia Commerce Bank, up in the Peachtree Corners community, just a little north of it. In fact, very near where our business is, EMA is, up in the Norcross area. Dan, just prior to the break, I was commenting on how you have done a good job of not just building relationships with your direct bank customers, but in the community you're in. You do a remarkable job at that. I wish I did as well a job as you do at that. Can you tell us, you got any secrets for us in how you do that?
Lady, I don't really have any secrets, but I know it's important to get our name around. And like when we did the bank here, Georgia Commerce Bank office here in Peachtree Corners some 2 years ago, although I had been out here in Peachtree Corners for some 25 plus years, no one really knew who Georgia Commerce Bank was. And I felt it was very important that I get out and meet as many of the people and become involved and develop relationships with as many people as I possibly could. We put a group together and started the Peachtree Corners Business Association. I was one of the original directors and officers of that association. We've grown that association here in Peachtree Corners to have like 176 different companies. Wow. Now that are members of that association, with some 400 representatives there. Last year, I served as president of that association, and I'll continue as director this year. But by doing so, it gives us the opportunity to not only meet the mayor, the council, people who work for the city. It gets us opportunity at these meetings to meet a lot of the small business owners in Peachtree Corners that we want to do business with. So that's been very, very helpful for us. I'm a member of the Chairman's Club at the Gwinnett County Chamber of Commerce, and of course attend those meetings, and another opportunity to meet people there. So you never know, if even when you're talking to somebody, if they don't have a banking need, you know, the very next day they may be talking to a friend or an associate, and something comes up about they're not happy with their bank or they have a need, and hopefully they remember my name when that comes up. And so you just build on those, and I think it is important that you have to give back to the community. We participate in, you know, the Norcross High School football program, different things here to give back to the community. And I think that's important for anyone in banking.
You know, aside from the obvious goodness of doing that, whether, I mean, it's a good thing to do just for the community and for you and for your life and you know, even outside your career, I think what I'm thinking about when you're talking about that, you're sort of talking about a bit of indirect marketing. We've talked on the program with a number of folks about that, the idea that, you know, that people sort of resent being sold. They like to buy, but they don't want to be sold. And every, you know, everybody needs a bank. You find very, very few people that don't do business with a bank somewhere. And they either, you know, most small businesses, I'll speak for me, most of us probably know less about banking than we know about almost anything else. And so we need people like you to help us out. Let me ask you a bit of a related question. In your view, and you got a small business person like me looking for a bank, and what should they be looking for in that bank? Is there anything, you got any particular ideas about that?
You know, Eddie, I think it's a good idea to actually go to several banks and talk to the people there and really, I guess you'd say, almost interview them and talk to the person that you're going to be doing business with. Find out what kind of authority that person has. Do they have authority to help you when you need help, or does it have to go through 6 or 7 layers, you know, to get the proper approval? Find out if that person, how long he's been there, if, you know, what are the possibilities of him continuing in that spot, things of that nature. Because I do think it's important that people realize, you know, most people don't really care what the name of the bank is. It's the relationship and how they're treated and at that particular place.
Let's talk a moment about Georgia Commerce Bank in particular, the branch that you operate and run there. Give us a little history and background and perhaps a little bit of knowledge about your branch and what you guys do.
Okay. Like I mentioned earlier, I've been out in Peachtree Corners, Norcross area for some 25-plus years in community banking. And Georgia Commerce, I had known the people there for several years, and they had expressed an interest in developing a branch out here in Peachtree Corners, and asked me would I help them do that. We were fortunate that we found a building here at 200 Scientific Drive right here on Peachtree Parkway that we were able to purchase and then go in and fix up for the branch. I was fortunate that I was able to hire my own staff, so actually went back to people that I'd worked with and was able to pick out what I call the cream of the crop, people that do have that personality that you mentioned earlier, the friendly sales personality. I do think that's something that you have to look at in the person. I don't think that's something you can develop. You can develop certain skills, but it's very, very difficult to get that personality that people really are drawn to and enjoy. And so I was fortunate to be able to do that. And I've got tellers that have been with me at, you know, some 20-plus years. And it just, you know, when somebody comes in here, they know that they're to not only treat them the way that they want, that they would want to be treated, but also that get to know them, know their name, so that when they come back again, they know who they are and don't go through the hassle of getting 2 pieces of identification and all that, fingerprints, whatever the case may be. So I think that's important, and we've done very well here. We've developed relationships with the city here at Peachtree Corners. We've been fortunate enough to finance their new property that they purchased for the new town center down here that they will be starting on in the next year. We've been very involved, not only me but my staff in the other clubs and so forth out here, and I think we're making a big entry into the market. I think now that if you ask people who Georgia Commerce Bank is, they know who it is. Our sweet spot here is banking small businesses. We think we do a good job of that. But above all is developing a relationship with a customer and growing with him and understanding his business. By doing what we're doing with small businesses and so forth, it's really kept us out of trouble over the last 5 to 7 years when so many banks had failed. Georgia Commerce is, although we do real estate related loans, we did not do a lot of speculative type stuff, and
right.
So we did not get hurt during those years where Georgia led the nation in closed banks. So we've been very fortunate, and we're going to continue to build off of that.
You know, I can't hear while you're talking. I was going to ask you some more questions about marketing, but you're really answering them without me asking that question. Because, you know, I was going to say, how do you find new clients and things like that? But you're sort of answering that. Is that you? And when you sort of identified a niche to go after, I always tell folks that what little advice I give people that are trying to start a business is to determine what business you're in and who your potential clients are, and understand that very clearly, and then go after them in that regard. And the second thing, the very idea, you know, you sort of reiterated what I said earlier, the idea that when we hire people that are friendly to start with. Then, you know, years ago, I don't know if I've talked to you about this or not, but you know, I got criticized once by a consultant that I had hired to help me do a couple of things in the business. He said that I placed too much emphasis on technical skills. And I argued back and said, we're a technical business. We have to have these engineering technical skills. He said, you do, but you're employing people that have horrible personalities, and you're putting them in front of your customers. And they have technical skills, but they're annoying your customers. It's something I had to come to grips with, and I finally did come to grips with that, and we changed our whole interview process and hiring process. And it makes it very hard to find sometimes the people we're looking for, but we're looking for people with those technical skills, and just as importantly, we interview for those personalities, or those soft touch skills too, because they're going to be in front of our customers. It matters that they're friendly to them. You're listening to Driven to Business. We're talking with Dan Baker. More to come in just a moment. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Welcome back to Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. We're streaming live on biz1190.com. Today's program will be podcast on eddiemayfield.com and on iTunes. And by the way, you can go to iTunes and subscribe to us. I also want to tell you there is a biz1190 app. You can go to the App Store, your iPhone App Store. It's free. You can download it, and that will give you not only our program, but all of the great programming here on biz1190 right on your cell phone. So check that out. Again, it's just called biz1190, the app on there. Dan, we were talking, by the way, we were talking with Dan Baker with Dan's with Georgia Commerce Bank there in Peachtree Corners, Georgia. Then, you know, you're a startup branch, and you talked a little bit about this. I've started a couple small businesses on my own, and in addition to that, for people that I used to work for, I helped them start branches of businesses. And you know, that's a whole unique set of challenges. And I'm sure you face that as well. I've never started a bank, but I would feel rather certain that just starting a new venture of any sort, and you already alluded to that a little bit, that people didn't know who Georgia Commerce was, and so you're starting a branch out there. In sort of a general sense, for people that might be starting a business, and from your experience, what's your any other thoughts about that, the particular challenges you face in any kind of a startup?
Well, of course, you know, you have challenges, I think, of hiring the right people, and I have been very fortunate to be able to build off of relationships with people that I've worked with before that I know have the right personality and so forth. So I think that, first of all, is very, very important, the people that you hire that are going to be dealing with your clients. But you know, I think you've also got to get out. The old days of sitting behind the desk waiting for people to come to
right.
you, especially in banking, I think are over. And you've got to get out in the community and the business community, as well as, you know, just anywhere you can participate. I mean, we participate in, you know, everything we can out here as far as the Peachtree Corners Festival, whatever, to get our name out there. We subscribe to a company called BusinessWise, that where we can pick out a particular street and it'll give us the name of every business on the street, who the offices are, phone number, in many cases the email, and we solicit those clients to try to not necessarily, we don't hit them hard trying to sell them on banking or anything, but we're your neighbor, we'd like to come just meet you and introduce ourselves, and then, you know, not try to be a hard sale, but at least get our name out in front
right.
of them, and like I mentioned earlier, hopefully, you know, we'll have the opportunity to do business, but in this day and time, you know, with all the guards at the front door, you can't get in. The cold
right.
call is kind of almost
right.
a thing of the past. So, you know, those are the kind of problems you run against. You just got to try to work around those, I think.
It is interesting to me a little bit in this super connected age in which we live, where everybody is walking around with, you know, with, I know when you and I were young men would have been considered completely impossibly idea, but the computing power we walk around with in our coat pocket, you know, from the smartphones we carry around, and the fact that we're constantly in, you can be constantly in touch with somebody anywhere in the world almost, and everybody's on, you know, then the ever changing social media landscape, and you know, people have various opinions about that, but one opinion you can't have that it's not there and not affecting people, because it does, it is there, but it seems like along with that, and maybe even more than ever, people long for a personal touch out of things, and it's like we. There's something in us that almost rebels against this sitting inside. And what you said about you've got to get out. I've got a good friend who trains, it's a completely different kind of thing. You and I are either. He actually trains people that plant churches and start churches. I know one of the things he tells them is you're not going to start a church from your computer screen. It isn't going to happen. You're going to have to get out and meet who lives in the streets around there. You're going to have to be in the restaurants. You're going to have to be where people are, and you're going to have to do it with relationships. You're not going to do it. You can use your computer after to maintain some of those relationships, but you're not going to make relationships off a computer. And it is kind of amazing, isn't it, this technological age we live, and I'm going to ask you some very specific banking questions here in just a moment about that, but just in general, are you sometimes surprised by it as I am of where we've come?
I am. I'm from the old school, you know, where, you know, when I first started in banking, we used an ad machine, you know, and did it all by hand and all that. But it, you know, and probably fought the computer for years, you know, not have to do it. But you've got to now. I mean, with all the electronic stuff that we do, you've got to be involved with that. You've got to learn it, and you've got to take advantage of that, because that's what your competitors are doing. That's what your clients are doing. So,
hey, before we run out of time, I want to ask you some very specific banking questions. I think a lot of our small business listeners might be interested in hearing you talk about. Let's just talk about some bank jargon in a moment. And you know, Dan, this is your line of work. For a lot of us, a lot of this is a bit of a foreign language. And so let's just talk about them a little bit. One of them is a line of credit. Why does a business need a line of credit? What's it for?
You know, Eddie, most businesses have their peaks and valleys, I guess you'd call it, in their business. And a lot of them have a lot of accounts receivable. And sometimes those receivables pay prompt. Sometimes they string you out a little bit and so forth. And that can have a big impact on your cash. What we do in a line of credit is we establish a line of credit, which is like a master note, if you will, let's say for, I don't know, $200,000 or whatever the number may be, and that amount is reserved for you there, and it's available for you to draw on when you need it for cash. And then, you know, when you collect your receivables or you don't need that cash again, you just pay down the line of credit. But it helps you whenever you maybe, you know, have a need for cash. One quick story, we have a client that one of his large customers is, say, Walmart. And Walmart is so big that it pretty well calls its shots. It may, you know, it may tell you that they're not going to pay for 90 days or 120 days. And if you want their business, that you have to accept
right,
it. You may
right.
normally have a 30-day term on all your others, but if you want Walmart's business, you're going to do what they say. They're the big guy, and if you don't do what they say, they just go to somebody else.
Right.
And if you're waiting, you know, if you've got a big order out, say, to a Walmart or someone, and you're not going to be paid for 120 days, well, chances are you've already had to pay for those goods. So it'll, you can draw on that line of credit to help you get through that and help you wait on that money. You can also, a lot of times we have clients that draw on the line of credit and pay that invoice quickly and get a discount on the invoice. So
right.
It can work a lot of different ways, and it's kind of, and if you don't think you even need it, I would recommend that you get one set up just as an insurance policy, because this may sound funny, but the best time to apply for those type of credits is when you don't need them.
Yeah, that's always been our complaint about banks. we're a fairly typical company, I think, and we've operated for many years as a service company and did not need. Although I have had a line of credit in the past, we've used it a little bit, but not much. But you know, our business at EMA, and you and I have talked about this, we're evolving into more of a project-oriented type situation. And you know, the thing is, with a project, you may have to buy equipment today. You're not going to invoice for 60 days because it's going to take you that long to get everything
right.
done. And sometimes you got upfront payments from the customer. Sometimes you don't. Again, if you're dealing with an Exxon or somebody who you know is good for the money, and a big company like that with big projects, pretty much they do call the shots in some ways. They can say, no, we're not going to pay anything up front. You know we're good for the money when it's done. And, of course, they are. And so, you know, that's why we have to use a line of credit. But it's the same thing, isn't it, really? We used to talk about financing your receivables. Is that any different than a line of credit? Is that the same thing?
It's pretty much the same. I mean, we call it a line of credit, but we're pretty much financing your receivables. Now, there are lines of credit, you know, for different companies, you know, that they use, that we may use a commercial building or something and
right.
set you up a line of credit. But typically, it's to finance receivables, working capital, things of that nature. And what typically, they're set up for 1 year at a time. You pay a fee for that line of credit, but it's there set aside for you, and then at the end of 1 year, typically, you know, you get your financials pulled together, you sit down with your banker to review your progress for the year, your profitability, etc., and then, you know, renew it for another year. That's
right.
Typically the way. Most banks like for a line of credit to be cleaned up. When I say cleaned up, paid out for at least 30 days. The regulators also like to see that. Because it shows that you've got the ability to pay it back.
Right. Know? Yeah, these are differentiated from long-term financing type loans.
Right.
This is a short term where you do need
That's
to
right.
pay right back. Hey, in about a minute here, tell us about FDIC insurance. What that for a company? We all see that on bank signs. What does that really mean?
FDIC insurance is part of the federal government, and it covers your deposits. It insures you from a loss. You know, when I started years ago, it was up to $100,000. They did raise that now, so it's $250,000 per account.
Is that per customer or per account?
It would take a few minutes to explain that.
Okay, that's right.
Because, you know, if you've got, for example, if you've got a single account just in your name, you could be insured for $250,000. Then if you had a joint with your wife, you know, that could be a joint account. So that's $250,000.
Okay.
You know. You can have other accounts where you do like payable on death accounts to like your three children or two children, and each one of those are then is insured another $250 for each one. So although it says $250, there are a lot of ways to get a lot more insurance than that. But it basically it's going to protect you in the case the bank ever failed, that your deposit is insured for that amount by the federal government, and you don't have to worry about that loss.
You know, a complete bank failure that pays out FDIC is a rarity nowadays. I'm sure that most of our folks should know. And nowadays, what generally happens is regulators come in and they have the bank taken over by somebody else, and you're fine. It's just that the bank is now it was absorbed into a larger bank or another bank, at least for that term. But you know, you don't hear too much anymore about a bank being really just declared insolvent and people. And FDIC paying out the, I guess one reason the feds don't want to pay out that FDIC, I guess that's one reason for that. But
well, and that's true, and that's exactly what happened over the last 5 to 7 years. There may have been some, but I don't know of anyone who lost any money on uninsured deposits.
No, neither do I. Hey, you're listening to Dan. Let's go to break. We'll continue this discussion. We're talking to Dan Baker with Georgia Commerce Bank and Peachtree Corners. I'm Eddie Mayfield. You're listening to Driven to Business. Back in just a moment. Welcome back to the final segment of today's Driven to Business. I'm Eddie Mayfield. Glad you're here. We're talking with Dan Baker. Dan is the Senior Vice President and the Marketing Executive with Georgia Commerce Bank, and he's over their branch in the Peachtree Corners, Georgia, a fairly new branch, although not brand new, becoming quite established out there. Just before the break, we were talking about the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, the FDIC insurance. It basically is a stopgap insurance. If the bank just absolutely folds and goes away, then your deposits are insured up to $250,000 per account there. And we were also talking about the fact that that FDIC payouts are a rarity because the banks are really watched much more closely now. And what will happen is regulators will come in and actually move them over. Anything else that people need to know about that? Is that pretty much covered? Or,
well, I would just say, you know, that if you have any questions about the FDIC, go to the FDIC website, and there's a FDIC insurance section there, and it gives you everything. It even tells you how to structure accounts to get more insurance.
Oh, wow!
It also gives you a calculator so that you can put in the type of account that you have, and the amount and so forth, and it actually shows you what's insured and what's not insured to help you keep straight there. As a matter of fact, that's what we always do here, is we use that calculator here to make sure that all of our customers have all their accounts insured.
Hey, well, speaking of websites, what is your website? How do people find you?
Ours is www.gacommercebank.com. That's our website. And would love for people to go to it, take a look at it. You'll see we show a lot of our customers on our website, and we show what they think about the bank and so forth. So we would certainly invite you to take a look at that.
By the way, it's GeorgiaCommerceBank.com, and links to that, if you forget that, will be on EddieMayfield.com. Just go to the blog page. There'll be a little write-up about Dan and about the program today, and there'll be links to him on there. Also, the podcast will have links on it. To that, Daniel, our business, as you know, we get a lot of our payments now. We still get checks in the mail, but we're getting more and more electronic type payments where somebody and we do credit cards too, but not just credit cards, but where people do bank transfers into your accounts and all that kind of thing. Tell us a little bit about the technology that you're seeing more and more and more in banks now, banking.
Well, I think that's something that you're going to continue to see more and more of. You know, the old brick and mortar branches are kind of fading to some degree. I think there'll always be a need for some of those, especially community banks. But there's so much that can be done now electronically, like through automatic ACHs, which is automatic clearing houses, where people originate those deposits and send them directly to your account. One thing that you and I were talking about recently was so many of our business customers use a product that we have called Remote Deposit. And what that basically is we put a scanner in your office there, and you never have to leave your office to make a deposit into your account. You just scan those checks through the scanner. They immediately credit to your account, and saves the time, you know, for you or your employee to be away from the office to go to the bank, gives you immediate credit and so forth. So I think you're going to see, we're already seeing more and more companies take advantage of that. And people may ride by this bank and say, well, you know, I don't all ever see any cars there. Well, people don't come to the bank like they used
right,
to.
Right.
It's, you know, they you've got your ATMs to get your money out of any ATM. As on that subject, I'll mention this too, Eddie. We waive the fees on any ATM in the world if you have an account with us. We eat those fees. So it's a Bank America's ATM is our ATM. And that's one of the things we feel, being a smaller bank, that with less locations that we need to do, but we do that. That's a big selling point, I think, for our bank.
That's a great selling point for your bank. You know, Dan, I was sitting here thinking of this remote deposit scanning thing. If I could think of a way to do that with cash, I could probably increase our company's profits. I'm just kidding, just kidding.
Yeah.
Dan, I'm going to ask you one other quick question because it's on your website. So I ask you, what is private banking? Tell me what that is. That doesn't apply to everybody I know, but it does to some folks.
Typically, private banking is referred to as banking high net worth individuals that demand more customized service and so forth, help them with their investments, things of that nature. A lot of banks have a private banking area. Some banks, they even, in private banking, if you need to make a deposit, the banker comes and gets a deposit for you. So it depends on the bank itself, but that's what he's talking about when it's private bank. It's more higher end, higher net worth, larger balanced customer that the bank is banking.
I really had never heard a term. I was looking at your website in preparation for today's program. I saw that. Dan, you've been, again, as we said, in banking a long time. Let's say a young person coming out of college wants to pursue a career in the banking industry. What do you advise them to do?
Well, a couple of things, I think. First of all, I would encourage them to go to either their bank or their parents' bank and try to get to know the people there, get to know the branch manager, or an officer of the bank as frequently as they can to get to know them, open up an account there and so forth. I would advise them to see if perhaps they could get a summer job at the bank, because a lot of banks hire people for the summer because, you've got employees, full-time employees that are taking vacations and so forth, and you need some help. That gets you in there. If you do a really good job, then I know we've hired people that we've had as what we call summer interns. We've hired them here in the bank. The other thing is, and it's not as much in community banks, but it is with regional banks, but a lot of the regional banks have training programs where they hire people right out of college and so forth and put them through a training program that kind of trains them in every facet of the bank. I would suggest that whoever that person is, they take as many accounting courses as they can while they're in school and so forth, because that's going to help them too. It's going to let them diversify into different fields and so forth, whether it be credit analysis, commercial lending, retail lending, things of that nature.
You know, as you've talked off and on many times on the program here already today, though, it's also important they develop some people skills, isn't it? I mean, it's not just all accounting skills. You need to get a lot of people. Or how to do that. Dan, we're getting close on time here. Do you have any mentors or people that had significant influence on you and your career you could tell us about real briefly?
Well, I was actually hired by an individual back in 1972, and although worked for four or five banks between 72 and now, I guess you would say, most of those years, with the exception of the last maybe five, worked with that person and really look up to him and have learned a lot of those what we call people skills and just a lot about banking. So I think we all have someone that is a mentor to us if we think about it.
And I think also it's kind of important that as we move along, we try to help other folks. And I've heard a friend of mine tell me he didn't like the term mentor. I'm not sure what he wants to replace it with. So whether you call it a mentor or not, it's just helping somebody out, sharing your advice to them. This amazes me a little bit. I had a discussion this morning with one of our employees. They were telling me how the dollar's up against the euro. Now, we're a small little Norcross business, and how we know that is that we buy things out of Europe, and we have banks that take care of those exchanges for us. And so, but it's amazing, isn't it, that we're into that kind of thing these days?
Well, it is. We don't do a lot of it here. Most of ours is, people dealing locally and so forth. We do help our customers with international wires through a correspondent or through the Fed, but we don't get into a lot of the money, in different systems and so forth.
Dan, you've been a great guest. I appreciate you being on the program. We have run slap out of time here, as I was afraid that we would, and Isaac's giving us the wrap-up signal here. I appreciate you being a guest on today's program. I hope to have you back.
Well, thank you, Eddie. I appreciate your friendship and look forward to talking with you soon.
And let me just remind everybody again that it's GeorgiaCommerceBank.com. Also, there'll be links to him on EddieMayfield.com. You've been listening to Driven to Business. We're here every week right here on Atlanta's Biz 1190 podcast, right after the program on EddieMayfield.com and iTunes. And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to Driven to Business with your host, Eddie Mayfield. Visit next Saturday at 11 a.m. on Biz 1190 for more Driven to Business. To learn more about Driven to Business, visit EddieMayfield.com or call 770-448-4644.